Well, it's the Club and Country Podcast, the podcast of record, brought to you by the two people who've covered the club longer than anyone in their respective disciplines. I thought about making a joke and having us both introduce ourselves as Lucas McNaughton, given the avatar trend on Twitter this week, but I am Wes Bowling.
And I am Tim Sullivan, the proprietor of ClubCountryUSA.com. And Wes, I have to say, it is lovely to hear your voice, my friend.
It's great to talk to you, man. I have been watching the last, I guess, three Nashville SC matches I've been able to watch, but have been buried with personal stuff, with family health stuff. I've been vague about that on Twitter, other than to say it's my wife and it's pretty serious. But she's a fighter, and we're up here in Canada. And man, you guys have obviously carried the load so well in my absence. Braden, Steve, awesome guest last week, pre-Galaxy. I've listened, and I've also heard so much of the encouragement from you directly, personally, but also from so many who've listened to the show. So thank you. Thanks to Steve and Braden for filling in and also being just personally supportive. Won't go much into the rest of it, the specifics of it, other than to say that you understand the meaning of a community like this when you go through something that is absolute pure hell that I wouldn't wish on anybody, and the communities come through in a big way. So thank you, and thanks to everybody. I won't say much more about it now, but it is great to be back and great to be chatting with you, even after, Tim, segue time, a disappointing couple of matches for Nashville SC, see them out of CCL.
Yeah, and when you play against a club like Miami, you expect that if Lionel Messi doesn't beat you, you have a pretty good chance. Problem is that Lionel Messi is going to beat you a lot, and he did that in both matches with the assist and the goal last week. He had, I believe, the assist and the goal today as well. So this is a guy that, you know, he's not the best who ever put on shoes for nothing. This is a guy who can beat you single-handedly. And then, of course, after he goes out this evening as we record, Robert Taylor, his replacement, goes and puts the dagger in Nashville SC. So a humbling experience for the boys in gold over the past 7 days.
Yeah, my thesis after the match was that advancement was attainable for Nashville, even in the second half, even down 2-0. You know, that second goal really didn't mean a lot, because two away goals and you not the fixture and you're taking this thing to extra time or penalties. Even down 3-0, they get the one back and you're thinking, like, okay, that's not going to happen. This one happened in stoppage time, but it's not been bad soccer from Nashville. I think we can ask questions, and I will ask you a couple questions about the balance in the first half of the second leg here on Wednesday night. But the chances were there in the second half to make this thing really interesting. Against Miami, though, it's not the cumulative minutes, the cumulative 180 that gets you. It's two or three moments. I mean, the small sample size favors a Miami team that can do otherworldly things the seven times their stars touch the ball in a game. And I think that's exactly what they showcase. And Tim, I think what frustrates so much of MLS now, there's this messy worship, and you and I both have undying respect for the guy, of course, because he can transform a game, transform a league with minimal touches. And that happened in Nashville.
Yeah, I actually thought even in the first half, Nashville was not the much worse team. I was watching while reading along online with some people, and somebody said, "Oh man, Nashville really sucks." As soon as NSC went down 2-0, I'm like, "Man, this has felt a little bit like an even game that just happens to have the best player on earth playing for one of the teams." And I still genuinely feel that way. Obviously, Nashville heavily tilted the field in the second half, like you just mentioned, but it didn't seem like a game that they were played off the pitch, except in those crucial moments. And those crucial moments, unfortunately for Nashville in this instance, are what really matters. We talk a lot about how over small sample sizes, especially, finishing isn't a real thing. There's one player that's a clear exception to that. And he only scored one that I think you would expect a lot of guys in MLS to score this evening. But the vision on the pass to Suarez, to hit the guy millimeters onside, it's just the sort of performance that you really do have to tip your hat. And if Messi is healthy this year, I don't think you're going to see Miami missing the MLS Cup playoffs. Even if they advance all the way to the CCL final, I don't think this is the sort of team that's going to say, "Oh, we run out of steam," like many do.
And I am often I've caught myself in the past naturally rooting against the phenomena, the dynasties. I think many of us do that, right? We love an underdog story. I'm going to be of two minds with Miami the rest of the year now that this series is over. Number one, I don't like the way that they go about their business off the
Oh
pitch a
man,
lot of
it's
times.
terrible. It's
It's
terrible. It's
miserable.
and it comes from a lot of sources, but it comes from Tata. The
Totally does.
dude is a bad coach, but a great recruiter, and he instructs his teams to go goon it up a bit, and they do. They listen to what he says, and they don't get punished for it. So they might as well continue doing it.
Not stylistically, but from a mentality standpoint, Tata is what Oscar Pereja goes to bed at night dreaming he would like to be.
Yes, absolutely.
So number one, I don't love the way they go about their business. Gomez, not a fan. Busquets, Alba, brilliant at buying calls, and they've done it for years. But on the other hand, I'm going to enjoy these moments when they happen to other teams. I'm going to enjoy watching Miami pull some of this stuff, even as I don't want them to win MLS Cup and, make MLS feel that much less legitimate. I'm gonna enjoy this a little bit now. But Nashville SC fans aren't wanting to hear that now, of course, because I think I would think that maybe other than Orlando, this is the team that you'd least like to have this happen to you against, right? I mean, maybe
Maybe
Cincinnati.
Atlanta, but
Yeah, I mean the big four, I guess, but like it's gonna sting not just because it happened, but because of who it happened against, right?
yeah, absolutely. And the style that Miami plays, what happened the first time Miami came to Nissan Stadium, way back in 2021, I believe. No, yeah, it
It
might
was
not have been the
20.
first time.
It was 20,
Yeah, it was
yeah.
20, and there were fights in the parking lot between Miami fans. It wasn't even against Nashville fans. I said something mildly critical of the way the Lucas McNaught and Messi play last week has been talked about over the past week, and you get the dumbest people on the planet in your mentions.
Yes.
I have covered Michigan and dealt with Ohio State fans. I have covered Virginia Tech and felt with Virginia Tech fans. The Miami fans really raise the bar on how dumb people can be on the internet sometimes. And it's not all Miami fans, and I don't intend to paint with a broad brush, but the bottom of the barrel of the Miami fans are by far the worst I've encountered.
Well, and you have to work through like, is this a fan or is this a crypto bot? Is this a like,
Yeah.
it's almost impossible to sort through because the
Is
logic
the
is.
link in bio? We may never know.
But then it's a bot when their logic is better. Before we go any deeper into our reaction to this and kind of what comes next for Nashville, be remiss if we didn't, of course, thank our partners. And that starts with ML Rose, the presenting partner of Club and Country. They're going to have a lot of fun with some green beer on St. Patrick's Day. So you've got a weekend plan here, right? 8th Avenue location on the 16th for Nashville versus Charlotte. And go ahead and build up your tolerance for the next day, because that's how the science of it works, I'm sure. And enjoy ML Rose on 8th Avenue. Go to the home match against Charlotte and take out all your frustration at those messy fans by screaming for the boys in gold. And then Sunday, a weekend St. Patrick's Day is the dream, right? And a chance to enjoy some St. Paddy's Day
I'm having
festivities
a
with ML
birthday
Rose.
party for a 6-year-old, unfortunately.
Hey, a party's a party, man. You can
Fair enough. Maybe
bring.
other sponsor will provide some
Yeah,
libations for that one, so.
Bearded Iris, indeed. And I'll tell you what, man. I'm stuck in Canada. Like, the cottage is wonderful up here. Family is wonderful. I say stuck. Obviously, the medical situation has us here. We're well taken care of, and mother-in-law's been amazing. Son is with us and is great, but we are here in Canada, and the one way in which I can say I'm stuck is I've not been able to find a New England IPA that approaches anything that Bearded Iris can put together. And I try, like, my self-care at the end of the day is a beer and a sporting event after the toddler goes to bed, and just to get my mind off everything. Unfortunately, the beer's not been very helpful because it's just not very good compared to Bearded Iris. I miss home style, man.
Yeah, well, hey, guess what? You were not even attached on this email. I would like for you to guess what the Bearded Iris tap of the week is, Wes.
Is it a double home style? Because I need two home styles.
It is home style.
It is home
And
style. Give us the
yes, it
tasting
is.
notes. I've been enjoying the tasting notes, by the way.
Shout out, yeah, shout out to Damon for just threading the needle on exactly what we needed this week. Or sorry. Shout out to Damien for did I say Damon? I
You
feel like I
said
said
Damon.
Damon.
I feel like
Okay,
you've talked to
sorry.
him before.
Shout
He's
out to
okay. He's a
Damien for
Yinzer from like central PA, so he's heard it all.
Yeah, he knew exactly what we needed this week. If you are listening, you have probably had Homestyle, and I would encourage you to have another one because it is inviting and bright, outrageously crushable, and designed for any occasion. It is their take on a classic for the ever-evolving world, but most of all, it is what you make of it. This is your Homestyle. The tasting notes are grapefruit, strawberry, frosted flakes, and fruit tea. And unfortunately, even if Braden and Steve were here, the hop varietal is very easy. It is a famously a single hop. It is mosaic hops
yes.
all around. Yeah,
I can't give tasting notes for many beers, or if I do, it's one of those where at the bar, like there's nothing wrong. You can't say anything wrong. It's all subjective, and I say it like, well, that's wrong. but the you know I've got there's almost memorized because it's the mosaic hops, but it's also the oat in there that it's just. It adds the mouthfeel is just so good. It's so like I think that's what makes the difference. An oated New England style IPA with the mosaic hops, man, that's not just the tap of the week for me. That's the tap of life. That's my beer. That's it. Having said that, I guess if you volunteered the beer, I'll go with my tap of the week. And I know it's going to be pretty dumb to say Sam Surge's goal and Nashville's lone goal in this second leg, but I think this could be really important for Nashville. I know it's a stoppage time, you know, cleanup time goal that had little impact on the no impact on the tie itself. But getting him off the mark, getting him in for 45 minutes in the second half, look, there aren't many positives to point to, certainly from a result standpoint. But I think Tim, it was a real positive to get him in. He missed a couple of chances that I think probably an inform in fully fit Sam Surge makes 9 times out of 10, but to get one in the back of the net, I don't think it just redeems a goal for Nashville. I think it could be a redeeming factor for him moving forward.
Yeah, and we mentioned this last year during the League's Cup run that, oh yeah, Surge is heating up. He's doing really well in League's Cup. And then league play returned and it didn't happen. I think Nashville has learned their lessons from that. And there's been a sort of, I don't want to say bringing him back slowly from his shoulder injury, although that is certainly something that happened, but bringing him back very intentionally in the way they go about it to give him the right kind of minutes to kind of build that confidence and say, it's not just for this match. It's not just for this competition. It is for the entire team for the entire year. And we believe that the way that we are reintegrating you into the lineup is the way that is going to get you to perform at your best for this club in Major League Soccer play. And I, you know, we can make predictions left and right all we want, and they will never, ever come true for the most part. But it does feel like this was the sort of goal that I think Nashville is going to be able to capitalize on a little bit more consistently because you saw the ones that he missed this afternoon or this evening as well. And you saw, you know, the frustration and then you got the payoff at the end. And I think those earlier missed chances are the ones that he's going to look at and say, you know, I scored a goal, but it wasn't good enough, and come back and sharpen his tool set a little bit for league play.
I'll quote a friend who texted me. I'll quote him anonymously. I didn't ask for his permission to share his name here. But he texted me right after the second match, and he says, Miami rarely misses an opportunity. NSC rarely makes one. Am I thinking right that that's been the problem since the beginning? And I think Sam Surge is a step, of course, toward remedying that problem, even though we missed a couple tonight. And I think you look ahead at Charlotte and what's next, and in a minute we'll talk about what Nashville SC takes from this and how they recover. And I think you have a Sam Surge who's played a total of about 60 minutes over the past two matches, who you'd like to think is going to be ready to start against Charlotte, ready to get going. And that can make a big difference for Nashville. But Tim, I think they also missed a couple other guys tonight. They missed a fully healthy Sam Surge. They missed Walker Zimmerman. I think that's probably obvious. That changes a lot of the decision-making going into this one. And I think they missed Randall Leal in this one, or a Leal type of player at his best. A guy who, yes, he can play on the wing, but he can freelance. He's an instinctive player, and Gary loves to call him instinctive. Somebody who can create trouble up the middle. And I think one of the biggest issues for Nashville against a back line that of Miami that no one would confuse for being legendary, they didn't have somebody to mix it up and play through Miami. They were relying almost exclusively on Jacob Schaffelberg's service from the end. And that can be pretty dang effective.
Yeah. I honestly felt, and obviously we know what Schaffelberg can do at his best, his service on this evening and his final product, as he was able to get in behind a couple of times. And instead of pushing to the end line and going for the pullback, was like, I kind of got to put on the brakes a little bit and we'll see what happens, and I'll whip a weird cross back across the top of the 18 that almost goes out on the opposite touchline. It was not his best performance. That's not to say that it's something that we expect of him, because the reason it was a bad performance is because it's not what we have come to expect of him. But I thought his performance was something that limited Nashville a few times this evening.
Yeah, I think they lacked a guy like Leal who can soften the middle of the pitch and shoot from distance, but also then create those lanes to chip it over the top, combine with Hani. I think at some point they're going to have to make a decision on Leal, and we hope that he at least is healthy enough to prove himself one way or the other as worthy of an extension, or maybe it's over for him. In the absence of Walker, Nashville made Gary Smith made an interesting decision. Three-man back line, Dan Lovitz at left center back. It lasted a half, and then they changed the shape once Surridge came in, and made a couple other changes there that I won't get into the minutiae of. But how'd you feel about that move to put Lovitz at left center back and Taylor at left wing back? It's not something that's new to Nashville, but it's not been done a lot. Do you like that better than putting Mayer, McNaughton, Bauer perhaps back there, or some other combination?
Yeah, I actually thought it was more of a back four with just Lovitz playing left center back, Bauer playing right center back, and Moore playing a more typical right fullback position. I thought it was an interesting choice. We've seen Lovitz find success as a center back before. It has typically been actually as the right-sided center back in the back three. You may recall from that blasting of Atlanta United that one time. That was really cool. Shout out to Daniel Rios. May you continue to find success back in your home, Mexico. But yeah, it is a situation where the lack of Walker Zimmerman means you either play somebody out of position or you play all of your depth at once. I think we are going to hear that Jack Mayer wasn't fully fit to play this evening, even though he was available off the bench. I think if the game had gone differently, maybe they may have tried him, but it is a situation where you make the most of what you have. And I think putting Lovitz in a bunch of different places can actually work. I think he could be a holding midfielder if you really needed it in a pinch, but obviously, it's not ideal to play guys out of position in a knockout match when you need a winner to advance because you gave up a high scoring draw at home. It's a situation that I thought actually worked pretty well. Like I mentioned, it didn't feel like Nashville was played off the pitch in the first half, aside from a couple of moments that are just moments. It felt like the game was pretty even, other than those. They still count. Don't get me wrong. They count. That is what deserves it. This is like when people try to mischaracterize XG conversations. The goals count, but in terms of the way the teams played and the quality of the performance, I thought it was a pretty evenly played game. And with Nashville playing a guy like Lovitz out of position, you get more from Lovitz with that role than you might from some other guys. But you also lose some stuff that Lovitz can't provide that a true center back can. But I thought it worked pretty well. And then obviously once the shape change was able to push him back out to his more natural position once the substitutions were made at half, it really seemed to put Nashville on the front foot. And of course the score line was part of that too. And it led to Miami getting a classic Nashville counterattacking goal to a certain extent.
And thanks for setting me straight on the formation. That was not poor analysis on my part. It was poor memory on my part. For some reason, had a back three in my head, even though it was pretty clear what Lovitz was doing there. And everything Gary Smith, does there is reliant not just on one guy doing his job, but on how he's going to, of course, link up to the other players around him. And having Lovitz at that left center back role means he can have that vision, get forward, have Godoy step back for him when he needs to, connect with Schappelberg, and be really ambitious and rangy down that left side. When I saw the lineup, I said, oh, all right, Nashville knows they have to go for it. They're not just going to try to get a smash and grab 1-0 here. They're gonna go for this. When you do that, you're going to get exposed at times, and that's where I think they again really missed a guy like Walker. They wouldn't have played this look with Walker in, of course. But if they, for some reason had a Walker for McNaughton, for instance, as good as Lucas has been, yeah, maybe it's a little different tonight. So let's look forward a little bit then. What is this series? What do these two games teach us about this Nashville team, when they actually line up to play, as opposed to what they've done in MLS so far, which is, hey, take their moments when they're there, but generally be pretty cagey and save bodies for CCL. So when they've actually played, what have you learned? What have you seen? And do you have reason for optimism, or do the concerns outweigh the hopes at this point?
Yeah, I think a couple things that we've learned. One of them comes from the rotation in league play is that there's more depth, quality depth, I would say, than there has been. Nashville has had players that they've been willing to put on the pitch in the past, but you could see huge steps down. I think the floor has raised a little bit for the bench, not the floor for the team, the floor for the bench, so that when you make a replacement, you aren't taking quite as big a step back in a lot of positions. Mackenzie Gaines is, you know, your probably your fourth or fifth winger at times, but he's the best fourth or fifth winger this club has had.
Yes.
I think you could say the same. I honestly, making Brian Nunga a clear fourth choice guy behind Yearwood, Godoy, Davis, I think when he's in that role where you can be a little bit more precise with him, because you can frankly trust Yearwood to play more minutes than you could trust Dax McCarty to play last year. And that's, again, we always have to clarify that that's not a rip on Dax. It just is reality.
Sure.
I think knowing that you can pick your spots for Anunga makes Anunga a better player for the way that you need to use him. And I think that improved depth really is something that is going to be a big deal for Nashville this year. The other thing is, I think Tyler Boyd is awesome. He has not had end product yet, but he's going to be a really good player for this team this year.
He's the exact kind of guy you just don't want running at you if you're a back line. We've seen him play up top. We've seen him play on the wing. Again, I've seen the bulk of minutes that Nashville's played this season, even as I've been, you know, driving an hour, well, 2 hours round trip to a hospital most days. Yeah, I really like what he offers. And I think this team has the solution in hand within its grasp to overcoming this CCL malaise that we often see. First, most practically, they're not going deep in the competition, and that's very unfortunate, but it does offer Nashville a chance to outshine some of the better teams in this league. I mean, look at what New England and Philadelphia have done so far in league play. Virtually nothing. And those are two clubs that we were talking about for top four in the East, and still may be when it's all said and done. I think I tweeted out Nashville's like fourth in the table of the eight teams that have played midweek matches so far and since the first round. But I think that depth is going to go a long way. I also want to shout out Forster Ajago. He's not a guy, obviously, that Nashville can employ in league play anytime soon. The one thing I'll say there is we've seen this team make magic work with green cards before, and I would think they wouldn't have even given him maybe even a look in CCL if there wasn't an opportunity for him to find the field at some point, maybe not next week or next month, but certainly this year. If you're interested, by the way, Huntsville, quick launch pad note, playing against Chattanooga on Saturday for a match. Chattanooga FC taking on Huntsville, just down at Finley Stadium, about the same distance as a drive down to Huntsville. Check it out. If you do, tweet at me. I got some great Chattanooga restaurant recommendations too. Spent a lot of time down there, but a chance maybe to see Forrester Ajago prove himself for Huntsville and stay fresh. And, you know, when we talk about depth, you know, maybe there's a shot he passes Teal Bunbury on the depth chart before the end of the season. I don't know, but wouldn't be, I think,
regardless of how you feel about Teal, if you think Teal is a very, very good player, you still want young guys to come in and beat out older guys, not least of which because you have more years of them in the future, but also because it means that there's a competitive level that is being raised. If Forster Ajago is able to beat out or compete with a guy like Teal Bunbury, it makes Bunbury raise his game too. And if Bunbury is the only one who's eligible to play in a league match, it is a situation where that makes him better still. And I think the competition, as Nashville does have this improved depth, is really going to help too.
I think the you mentioned a source of optimism, which is depth, and I completely concur. My question mark, and it's not a negative, it's not a source of skepticism, it's just a question mark, is can Nashville diversify its patterns of play in the attacking third? You know, I don't think that they're going to finish better than last year's seventh place, being a, you know, sit back and trap and counter team. Yeah, that may still be how they score a lot of goals, but I think they also have to have answers in the final third because teams are going to sit back against them at Geodis Park and make them break them down. And we've not seen enough, but with Hani and Surge being out, to know whether that can happen. If they rely almost exclusively or even primarily on Schaffelberg to beat guys to the inline and cross, he's going to take a lot more neck punches and he's going to keep getting up, but that's a lot to pin on one guy who has admitted himself he doesn't always have the recovery ability of a Hani Mukhtar. You know, he's a sprinter who's going to go 70 and be out, and I think Nashville has to mix up its approach. I also think that will happen when you have a guy like Tyler Boyd, who's a mosquito who can play all over the pitch. When you hopefully do get a healthy Leao back, when your DP striker is in there, and when Hani's in there, I'm actually more encouraged by how Nashville performed against Miami than I am discouraged. If I'm a Nashville SC supporter, I see a lot to like there, and Again, I think they have the bodies to overcome that post CCL malaise that we so often see.
Yeah, I think Boyd is the answer to having other attacking options than Schaffelberg on the break or Hani in transition. I think Boyd is a guy who can combine with Hani in a way that other guys, less Leal, who are still waiting to see, but he can combine in ways that other guys can't. And he can also break guys off on the dribble, and that's something that pretty much only Hani can do, at least in the middle of the pitch. There are guys who dip a shoulder and beat a defender to the end line, but somebody who can make it happen in the middle of traffic is going to be an important piece of making sure that Nashville is not one dimensional. And I think that he's the A1 option to make that happen.
A bit of bad good news as we look ahead at the fixtures. Charlotte is good news, them coming to town. Charlotte's still trying to find some answers. Going to LAFC after that is not great, but LAFC hasn't really found their stride yet. Then, depending on where things are in CCL, Nashville's next three opponents are actually teams who either are or have been in that competition. So they host Columbus, who has advanced past Houston into the round of eight. They host Philadelphia, who has not looked good in league play. That's still 3 weeks away, so maybe they will have recovered by then. Then they go to Miami.
I don't know. Yeah. It takes a while to recover from 6-0.
That was demoralizing. And I'm listening to Extra Time today. First time I listened to them in a good while, and just because of all that's going on. And they're like, Philadelphia's got the best chance of the three against Mexican teams. You know what? I'm not going to flame a guy for making a pick, you know, in favor of the Union on the road, but woof, that didn't work out so well. But Charlotte Saturday, do you want to do a quick, elevator pitch of what Nashville can expect out of that? I'll give the stats first. Charlotte beat NYCFC, which is not saying much, at home to start the year. Drew at Vancouver, fine. Lost to a Toronto team that's tough. They may not be good, but they're tough under John Herdman. This feels like an opportunity to get the first three-pointer of the year, as tired and weary as this team's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte has been rough basically since the beginning. They had, you know, those couple lucky results at the beginning of their inaugural season. You may recall I was there for their first home victory.
And I was there for their second after you mentioned it on the show. And I was like, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, this is cool.
I'll go.
But the big picture is this team has not found a way to be replacement level, much less good. If you are Nashville, you have to look at it as an opportunity because there aren't teams out there that you look at and say, oh, from 1 to 11, we are probably better than this team, in a way that I think Charlotte is one of the very few in this league that a bunch of teams are looking at and saying that. And yes, Karol Swiderski can make stuff happen. Ben Bender is a promising young guy, but you look up and down the roster and you say, there's just not a ton of talent. Junior Urso even isn't the Junior Urso of like 3 or 4 years ago with Orlando. It's not a team that you would look at and say, oh yeah, they're one that we really fear.
He's more like a senior Urso at this point. Am I right?
Heyo.
All right. You didn't miss me. You're rolling your eyes already. you didn't miss that at least. Yeah, I mean, I think the best news of all of this is that as Nashville's recovering from CCL, 9 of their first 13 games of the season are at home. And I know they've already played 2 of those 3, you know, at home. They traveling to LA is no fun. Going back to Miami sucks. But other than that, you're pretty much just rolling through the home schedule. And so on one hand, that's nice. On the other hand, it kind of ramps up the pressure to find that identity quickly, because the back half of the schedule is brutal. Nashville can't afford to just do the NBA thing and play the first 50 games on cruise control and then figure it out and get to the playoffs. They won't get there, or at least in a good spot. Everybody pretty much gets there these days. They're not going to be easy. But, Tim, I think there's reason for some hope amidst the frustration that Nashville SC fans understandably and justifiably feel tonight.
Yeah, it's so hard to look at getting knocked out of a competition that you and I both love and be like, oh, it's a good thing. But oh man, I almost feel that way. And it's what I was saying at the beginning of Leagues Cup last year, which is make it out of the group and then kind of cruise. And if you make it into the semifinals, then go for it. I'm fine. If you lose at this point of the competition, you know, you've beaten the Caribbean team. You've played the giant, which unfortunately is Miami rather than like Monterrey or somebody, but
right.
you fell in a matchup that just didn't go your way. but it's early enough that you didn't test your depth to the extent that you're going to be hurting the entire year, like what happened to Seattle a few years back, like what has felt like it's happened to Philly a couple times, actually, although they recover better than anybody because they have a very deep academy that can really help them out. I look at it and say, it stinks to be out, but for the course of Nashville SC's season, it might be best to be able to focus on league play. If they had beaten Miami tonight, I would say go for CCL and then worry about MLS later, like I always do.
Of course.
Since they're out now, it really does feel like it tees up this team to compete for the maximum number of competitions. I think CCL is the one competition that you can't go for it at the same time as you go for other things, really. Leagues Cup obviously has a very different structure. Major League Soccer is its own entity, of course. But, you know, as long as you don't lose to Mocha, you have done what you need to do in this competition to tread water, I guess. And as long as you don't embarrass yourselves, anything short of getting to the final is wasted depth, basically. And so unless you believe Nashville is going to get to the final, which we didn't believe at the beginning of League's Cup last year either. So maybe there was a chance that if they had gotten past Miami tonight, that they could have played all the way to the CCL final. But I think this is probably the game theory best possible outcome for how their season plays out.
I agree. I think that once again, we can hold two things in our heads, right? Which number one is it's always going to be disappointing to lose, especially to a team for whom Nashville SC supporters have developed some hostility, some of it well earned. But on the other hand, I think this does follow my model for what I thought Nashville SC should do, which is, hey, you know what? Give it your best against Miami. And if that doesn't work out, it's not bad. It's really not bad. It's disappointing in the moment, but I think it's a chance for Nashville to take elements of this and build its identity for this season. And I think that's what they'll be able to do. Tim, thanks again, man. It's great to see your face again. We've been texting a good bit, but it's good to chat again. I don't know yet what the cadence looks like for me to be back on these things, but I texted just behind the curtain a little bit. I texted Tim 20 minutes from the end of the game and said, hey, we should do one after this. I've got a quiet night now. Kids in bed, wife's well taken care of at the hospital. Let's roll. And so we rolled. And thanks for rolling with me, Tim, and everybody. Absolutely. Thanks for everything. Thanks for all the support. Thanks to our partners again, ML Rose. Man, what I wouldn't give for an ML Rose burger. Can they ship those to Canada freeze dried? I don't think that works very well, probably. They're better fresh. And boy, are they ever fresh. Bearded Iris too. Amazing, amazing beer. And you know that when you live in town, but when you're not able to get back for a while, you know it even more. You can't find stuff like Bearded Iris many places. So Tim, thanks to you.
I got one more thing about Bearded Iris. Okay. Sorry, Damien, you asked me to mention something. I don't remember what it was. I have to pull up your email real quick. 8-year anniversary party, April 6th, Germantown location of Bearded Iris.
All right. Be there. April 6th, you said. Eight years. 8 years, man, already. That's amazing. And they've grown so fast. One of the most beloved breweries and beers in Nashville. And they extend a lot further than that these days. Guys, thanks for everything. And we'll talk to you. Some combination of us will talk to you soon.